Hi, I'm Carrie Butler, and you're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. I have a special offer for my listeners. You can get my new course at carriebutlercoach.com/Broadway Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Once I played a penny who just couldn't stop the beat. Yes, with roller skates on her feet. A girl who loved her bees. A ghost is recently deceased. A real cool mom. A musical version of Tina Fey. Tina Fey. Now come with me and fly. Fly. I am your host, Miss Carrie Butler. Together you and I are brave.
Welcome back to Breaking Broadway. Today's guest is my friend Sandy Rustin, and I actually saw her perform at New Jersey Reps Theater, and I thought you were fantastic, but she has transitioned from acting into playwriting for the past 15 years. So she has so much stuff going on right now. She has a premiere of Mystic Pizza in LA at La Miranda Theater, the national tour of Clue launching next month out of the Orpheum Theater in Minnesota. I saw The Cottage, which was hilarious. It was just on Broadway, and now it's available for licensing via Broadway licensing. And her new play, The Suffragette's Murder, premiering at Denver Center for Performing Arts in January 2025. Welcome to the show, Sandy.
Thanks, Carrie. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh my gosh, you have so much going on.
God, it's great.
It's so exciting. So you just also had your Broadway debut as a writer, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was this summer with The Cottage. It was great.
And I'm great, great friends with so many people in that cast, including your two leads. And
yes,
it was really, really hilarious.
Thank you.
You
I'm so glad you got to see it.
You did such a good job. Yeah.
Thanks. That cast was stellar.
Yeah. So tell me about your sort of journey. Like, first of all, you're a fantastic actress. Like, I saw you in my friend James Hindman's show, and I just thought, like, you have it. You're fantastic.
Thanks, like, Carrie.
No, really. You made, like, really great choices. And so did you grow up wanting to be an actress? Did you even think about being a writer at that point?
Yes. So I grew up in Chicago, and I always, since I was a really little kid, had a double interest in performing and writing.
Really?
Always. Like my mom has this little book that I made her for Mother's Day in the sixth grade where you had to, like, write your bio on the inside cover. And I was 11 years old, and inside it said, Sandy wants to grow up to be an actress and a playwright.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. It's always what I've wanted to do. I grew up sort of in an improv comedy, sketch comedy world in Chicago. It was so easily accessible, and ended up at Northwestern University, which also had great, you know, comedy training, but also an incredible theater department where I was able to focus in performance and writing. I studied a bit in London my junior year in college. Again, I had a double focus there in performance.
I
and
did too.
Writing.
I went
you
to
did?
London my junior year. Yeah.
Oh, it was the best. Yeah. Yeah, and then I moved to New York right after I graduated from school, and I was working pretty steadily as an actor, and it really wasn't until I became a mom in 2005 that I suddenly discovered I didn't really want to be doing 8 shows a week while my husband was also working full time. It just wasn't I couldn't figure out the schedule while also being a parent. And so I just kind of organically shifted towards writing at that time. And then gradually that sort of became my focus and I started to have things produced. And, you know, I still have been performing over the last 2 decades, but with less regularity. In a few years I'll be an empty nester and then I might be able to get back to it again. But yeah, so I've kept my focus in both courts, but been primarily a playwright.
How did you first get produced? How did you break into it? Because it's not easy to break into New York playwriting.
So let's see. So when my oldest son, Isaac, was a baby, I started to get itchy to be creative. And I went to take some sketch writing and comedy and improv classes at Upright Citizens Brigade just for fun, to a break from nursing. And I had this great teacher there, Zach Woods, who has since gone on to become a famous actor. But at the time, he was my sketch writing teacher. And everything I was writing was about being a new young parent. Mm-hmm. And he was really encouraging. He was like, Sandy, nobody is writing this kind of stuff and keep going. And anyway, so I did. And before I knew it, I had the makings of a show, which I shared with some friends of mine. Dan Lipton and David Rossmer, and they were like, we think this could be a musical. So we ended up together creating this show called Rated P for Parenthood. Which was a sketch comedy musical, kind of like I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change.
Right.
But what I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change was for dating and marriage, Rated P for Parenthood was for parenting. And so at the same time, I had been running a theater company out in New Jersey, where we live, Carrie, called Midtown Direct Rep. And we raised a bunch of money, and we put up Rated P as a show in our community at the South Orange Performing Arts Center for a weekend. And I invited everybody I knew, because why not? And by the end of that weekend, some commercial producers had optioned it. And then months later, it opened at the West Side Theater off Broadway. And then it went on to get optioned by ABC Television. Because Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos' company, Melojo, came to see it, Kelly and Mark, just as parents. Uh-huh. And they loved it, and they optioned it. And then they sold it to ABC. So that was my first experience writing a show professionally.
Unbelievable!
Yeah, which was wild. And it just opened all sorts of doors, and it showed me, like, oh, I see. If you just create this opportunity for yourself, and you go for it, and you write what makes you happy, cool things can happen. And so that was the start of my professional playwriting career. And that was in 2012.
And so you didn't even have that much training then as a professional writer, right? Like, well, were you taking classes in Northwestern on writing?
Yeah. Yeah, I took playwriting classes in Northwestern. I took playwriting classes in London. I had taken extracurricular playwriting classes as a kid. And then I had been writing even when I was performing for that sort of decade that I was in New York City as a young actor. I was always writing at the same time. So I had training, but not necessarily experience until I wrote Rated P professionally.
That's really incredible.
Thanks.
That your first show.
It was wild.
Did you have a lot of rejection after that, or has it just been smooth sailing ever since?
Oh, yeah. Smooth sailing. No problems ever. No, yeah. I mean, this business is 95%. Rejection, maybe higher. I don't know what the percentage is. But yeah, you have to have really thick skin. And especially as a playwright. I mean, I always felt vulnerable as an actor as well. I think you have to put yourself out there as an actor. But something about playwriting, you are putting your ideas out there more than your physical self. And in doing that, it has felt infinitely more vulnerable than when I am on stage as a performer. Yeah, because people are judging your thoughts, your ideas, what you think is funny or what you think should make a person cry. So it feels more vulnerable. Yeah.
Wow. Have there been times where you thought you were going to even give up writing?
Definitely. Sure. I mean, first of all, I've been raising kids for the last 18 years. So my oldest son is 18. And sometimes you just need a job, you know, you just need to be. So I've had 1,000 day jobs. I've been a makeup artist. I've been a mortgage broker. I've taught acting. I've taught playwriting. I've taught improv comedy. You know, I've just had 1,000 jobs over the years when, you know, mama needs a job kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And I actually have also kept my foot in the door in my performance world as in voiceover. So I do a lot of voiceover work. So there have been many times over the years when I've thought, you know what, just do this, just go down. But for whatever reason, every time my heart brings me back to wanting to be a person that's in the rehearsal room and creating theater and making memorable nights in the theater for audiences, like that's always been where I'm, what I'm drawn back to. So I just keep finding myself back in this pool.
How does it feel when you're in the rehearsal room now? Is part of you like, oh, I wish I was performing my own show? Or are you like okay with letting it go?
Yeah. I mean, certainly every show I've ever written has a part for me in it. Because,
of course.
Or like all the parts are for me, right? Like I get, like my brain, I'm writing shows that I would love to be in just because that's the nature of creating theater, I think, when you're an actor. But that said, I have never had a moment in a rehearsal room where I've wished it was me instead. I'm always so grateful for the actors who have said yes and are willing to perform in my plays that it's like such a treat to watch other people bring their imagination to the table. Maybe one day I'll be in one of my shows. But for now, I'm happy to be in the seat as the writer in the rehearsal space and let other people do the magic on the stage.
So now that you are behind the table,
yes,
what things have you noticed even about auditioning, people coming in, you know, because that you didn't know when you were a performer and you're like, oh my gosh, I wish I knew that.
Yes, so many things. I think
really?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I have learned behind the table is that so much of auditioning has absolutely nothing to do with the actor. It has to do with what has already been imagined and envisioned before that person has ever walked through the door. It is very, very rare that an actor walks in who is totally on a different page than what the creative team has imagined for a role, and that person ends up getting the job. I have never really seen that happen. There is a collective understanding of the creative team of what each character, the essence, not necessarily what they need to look like, but the essence, the energy of what that character brings to the table. And if an actor walks into the room, even if they're the most brilliant actor you've ever seen, if they don't embody the essence of who that character is for that creative team, that job is not going to go to them. And God, as an actor myself, I spent so much time being like, you know, what can I do to prove to them that I'm a good enough actor? And it's so much of the time, it's just not about whether or not you're talented as an actor. It's about, are you bringing the energy of the character that the creative team is requiring in that moment? Are you bringing that into the audition space? And that's something you can't control, which is so freeing as an actor. Because if that's the case, then just walk into every single audition authentically yourself, prepared, do your best job with the character, do your best job with the role. And if you are the right essence of that character, the job is yours. And if not, it's meant for somebody else and yours is coming.
Yeah.
So that was a huge lesson that I've learned on the acting side of things by sitting behind the table as the writer.
Mm-hmm. What else have you seen with people coming in? And you're like, oh, no, don't do that. Any?
Oh, gosh. Are there any no-nos, don't do that? I mean, I guess what I like the most is when people come in easy. Confident, relaxed, prepared. They don't have a, you know, they're not chit-chatting with you about something unrelated to the play. Maybe it's like a quick hello, you know, some niceties, and then we move into the work. I really do believe that the audition room is a space for work. It's a space where we're working on trying to cast our play, and it's a space where actors are working trying to show you the material they've prepared. And that's the environment we like to cultivate in an audition space. And I think when actors walk into that space ready to work in that way, those are the most successful kinds of auditions, I think.
Mm. Do you know any places for young actors to network and make connections and maybe, you know, do stuff for free just because it's a good stepping stone for them?
Well, I would say for me that I found solace and experience in creating those kinds of opportunities for myself with my friends. You know, of course, there's all sorts of places that you can go and, you know, you can always be looking in Backstage and Playbill and all those different places to see different opportunities. But really for us, like my group of friends, when we graduated from college, the group of friends that moved to New York City, we did our own thing. We pooled some money, we rented a space, we put together shows, we would invite casting directors. We did it on our own. I think that the best place to network is, if you're moving to New York City, is before you move to New York. You know, create a space during your educational years where you're really meeting wonderful people and use those experiences and those people that you're meeting. When you move to New York, you've got a group already. You can read plays together in somebody's living room. You could rent a space and put on a showcase or do a night of monologues and invite people you know. Create opportunity for yourself. I think that was the most successful path for me and my group of friends when we first moved to New York.
That's amazing. Do you still talk to that group of friends?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
And have you ever cast any of them in any of your shows?
Oh, God. I cast my friends in my stuff all the time.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a pleasure. And now especially, these aren't my college friends necessarily. I suppose some still are. But I live in Maplewood, New Jersey. And as you well know, it's a community of a lot of theater people. And so whenever I'm working on a new play, like I've got, you know, my friends who are Broadway actors in my living room reading my first draft. And it's such a huge step forward for me, because if my words aren't going to work in the mouths of my friends who are so super talented, then I know there's something wrong with the writing. And it's so easy for me to see where the problems are and what I need to go back and resolve, because I'm starting with these actors that are like unbelievably inventive and creative and talented. So that's been a huge benefit to working with friends always.
That's so awesome. I know. I remember Adam Danheiser.
Yeah.
Oh, he's always in all your shows. And he's like, my friend Sandy's going to Broadway.
And Adam has also directed my work too.
Oh.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
What do you feel like has been the most challenging part of writing and being behind the table?
What's the most challenging part? I guess the most challenging part is, you know, when you have a play, you, as the playwright, you've imagined the whole thing. Top to bottom, you know how it's supposed to look, you know how it's supposed to move, you know where everybody's supposed to stand. Like I don't know if every playwright's this way, but for me, I have the whole play visually in my brain. And so as you add on the rest of your creative team, the director, the actors, the designers, you have to make space for all of their imaginations. And, you know, essentially the play itself, the script itself, and the playwright's imagination is layer one. And everything else gets layered on top of it. And so learning how to graciously make space for all those other layers, I think, is the biggest challenge for most playwrights. But it's also the biggest joy when it's an effective respectful collaboration with all those other people, that's when the real magic happens.
Mystic Pizza is a musical, right?
Yeah. It's a jukebox musical. It's all hits from the 80s and 90s.
Oh, okay. Yes. So I have a very technical question that I've been asking people lately.
Sure.
What do you feel like are the best audition songs? Or are you, when you they come in, you're like, oh, don't sing that. Are there any songs like that? It's such a personal thing, but it's interesting to hear different people have different takes on it, because then it also like is for the actor. It's like, oh, okay, well, some people are going to like this. Some people aren't going to like this. So what am I going to do? I just have to trust my own gut.
Yeah. I think that the most successful singing auditions are when the person feels great about it. I don't really care what the song is.
Oh.
Sometimes I've seen like people come in and it's almost as if somebody's told them to sing something, or somebody said like this song will be original or whatever, but the person's not quite comfortable in it.
Oh.
I feel like if that actor feels like $1 million singing that song, that's what I'm interested in. I want to hear you at your best. I want to hear you singing the way that you like to sing that makes you feel great. And I have seen auditions where an actor comes in and sings something that might not be particularly appropriate for the show, but makes them feel like $1 million. And we're like, that is the thing that interests us, being able to see you at your most authentic self. In fact, the actor who is playing Bill in Mystic Pizza right now is this great actor named, I'll give him a shout out, Jordan Friend. He came in to audition for Mystic Pizza. He came in, brought his own guitar, sang a song with his acoustic guitar, was it not in the style of Mystic Pizza. It was some like contemporary folk song, and we were like near tears by the end, and we fell in love with him, his essence. And then we were like, okay, now can you sing like 80s rock hits? but first we got to see him, what makes him feel alive as a singer, and that was really exciting.
That's really good to know. So even if people don't sing in the style of the show, like you'll give them the chance then to show what they could do, because you'll want to see more.
I mean, it's the same thing that we were talking about before. I'm interested in seeing the essence of the actor. And if that is through song, or if that is through a scene work, whatever that is, I want to know like what's at your core, and does that core match the core of this character?
How did you feel about auditioning when you were starting out?
Well, when I was starting out, I loved it. I thought it was so exciting. Every room I walked into, I was like, you know, ready to change my life. And gradually over the years, that feeling sort of changes. It gets exhausting. You have to have such a thick skin. So it certainly evolved. I will say with honesty that I do not miss auditioning.
Yeah. Do you have any good rejection stories?
Oh, God, I have about 1 million. I think my favorite one is probably my first one. So when I was a student at Northwestern, I came to New York to do like the senior showcase auditions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And from that, I got an agent. And then I think one of my very first auditions was before I'd even graduated. So I was back in Chicago, still in school, and I got invited to come audition for the national tour of Sunset Boulevard to play Betty, I think. And did you play that part, Carrie?
No.
Okay. And so I came to New York. I flew out to New York. And my mom bought me this like very pretty blue suit from BCBG. I still remember it. It was like so cool. And I had matching blue shoes and like a white camisole. I still remember it. And I went into the audition room. It was at Chelsea Studios. And it was Jay Binder sitting behind the table. And I did my audition, and I was so proud of myself. And he said to me, "You're great. You're green, but you're great." And I was like, "Thanks." And he was like, "All right, thanks." And I left. And I called my mom from a payphone and said, she's like, "How was it?" I said, I think it was good. He said I was green. What does that mean? And she said, "It means he thinks you're wonderful." And it wasn't until years later that I learned what being green meant.
Gosh.
But first of all, it makes me love my mom so much that she wouldn't tell me that it meant that I was like, you know, hot off the bus. Yeah. And, you know, Jay Bender went on to cast me in other things and was, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, but I did not get that job. But I took it as a nice rejection because he was kind of gentle with me. So.
Yeah. Do you miss performing now?
I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think about it a lot. And I look forward to the next chapter of my life when I'm not. I mean, I'm also dreading becoming an empty nester because I love being a mom. But there is something exciting about entering into a new chapter where performance might become part of the equation again for me. So, yeah, I love performing.
Do you have the same agents, like, still, even though you switched more to writing?
I don't. No, I am I actually don't really have a performing agent at the moment because I've been so focused on writing. If I wanted to if I was looking to do something performance-wise, I think I could access an agent through my literary office, and that would be fine. Uh-huh. But at the moment, I've just been really hyper focused on playwriting.
Hmm. Do you have any advice for people who might be listening and they just think of themselves as an actor, but they're thinking, you know, I have stories to tell, but I don't know how to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best advice I ever got as a budding playwright was to read every play I could. I had a playwriting teacher in college who told me, if you're not currently reading somebody else's play, then you can't call yourself a playwright. And I have taken that to heart my entire life. So I'm always reading somebody else's play. And I think having a play in your back pocket that you're reading, it helps you learn what you like and what you don't like. And it helps you, especially for actors. Actors tend to be excellent mimics. And so if you're reading a script, in understanding the structure or the style or how a playwright uses dialogue or vocabulary or language in a certain way might inform how you yourself might do that should you decide to put pen to paper. So the more you read, the more you become familiar with how the structure of a play works. And the more you're reading a play to understand it as a writer and not reading it in the myopic way that we read it when we're reading it for a character. Because when we read a play, when you're looking at it for a role, you're looking for where that character is, what that character wants. You're just totally reading it for that one character. Whereas the playwright, you zoom out. You're looking at it on a much more macro level. So starting to read plays with the brain of a playwright helps. And the more you read, the more you might discover what story you want to tell and how you want to tell it, what you like, and you know what you might want to avoid. So that's my best advice. That was the best advice given to me. So I'm happy to pass it along.
Have you noticed anything changed with your career now that you've been on Broadway?
There's definitely more doors opening, more meetings to take, more people willing to read plays that I've had in drawers for years, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think it sort of it puts a stamp of validation on your career as a playwright, and it sends a message to other people. Hey, maybe you might be interested in reading my next play or reading this other play that I have waiting for production. So, I mean, that has been the biggest shift, is that I feel like it has become less of a challenge to get people to be interested in reading something that I've written, which is such a nice feeling.
Yeah, so that, exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
My last question for you
is,
what advice would you give to your younger self?
I think I would tell my younger self to start yoga and meditation. 20 years ago, I found yoga and meditation in my 40s.
I
wish
yoga.
I had found it in my 20s because it is such that piece of taking care of yourself, of finding a real grounding and a real sort of coming home to yourself, has been such a valuable part of my professional life, my home life, like literally every component of my life. And I wish I had found it sooner because I think I could have saved myself a lot of angst. And I think I could have found a more grounding system in my body to move through those sort of insecure years where you're not sure if this is a career for you or not. Are you going to find a spot? Is there space for you? Is there room for your voice? All of those questions. I wish I'd had something in my life that had grounded me in the way that I have found yoga and meditation do for me now.
Amazing. Well, I'm so happy for all of your success.
Thank you.
It's so exciting. And thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing all your insight with us here at Breaking Broadway.
You're so nice to have me. I'm so happy to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like me to come to your school or theater group and give a masterclass or a talk back, please reach out at carriebutlercoach.com. If you like this podcast, subscribe and leave a rating. And in the comments, let me know what topics you want me to cover. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Together, you and I are breaking Broadway.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.